Good evening and welcome to the Commonwealth Club of California. I'm Norma Walden, chair of the club's International Relations Forum. We also welcome our radio audience, and we invite our audience to visit us online at commonwealthclub.org. I have to say, I've been particularly looking forward to this program. Cindy Seed is a world-leading etiquette trainer, celebrity speaker, and founder of San Francisco-based Advanced Etiquette. If her name, Cindy Seed, sounds familiar, you may have seen her on ABC's Good Morning America or on CBS, Eye on America. Just the other week, she appeared on National Public Radio on Marketplace with Guy Rizdahl. She was a contributor to the popular book Business Etiquette for Dummies, second edition. She is also the official etiquette trainer for the Miss Asian America pageant. Cindy is a graduate of the Protocol School of Washington, D.C. and the Emily Post Institute, where she holds the highest certifications in her field as an international protocol officer and a trainer in international business. She has authored 3 books. The second became a number 1 bestseller on Amazon.com. So let's now sit back and enjoy some advice from Cindy Seed about adventures in cross-cultural awareness, how to avoid faux pas in social and business situations. Don't know about you, audience, but I have plenty to learn.
Thank you so much, Norma. I am going to take this out and overall just kind of come behind the podium just because you can see I'm just barely 5'2", and it would be a little difficult for you to see me throughout the entire evening. In fact, now that I've got this up, I feel that this is kind of tall for me, so I'm going to even try and... There we go. Okay. Well, good evening, everyone. The famous motivational speaker Dale Carnegie once said, "To raise yourself to a better position, you've got to do something special and make that extra effort." So I certainly thank Norma and the Commonwealth Club for doing something special by inviting me to be here tonight. And I want to thank each and every one of you for making that extra effort to be here and to be here on time. As you know, it's one of the basic principles of etiquette, which is a little bit of a pet peeve of mine. And since we're talking primarily about international cultural awareness, I don't care with whatever country you go to, my default is always to be on time. Grant you, for social engagements in various countries, such as in South America, even in Asia, you might ask the host what the custom might be, but my thinking is always to be on time. I admit when I was young, the person that really taught me about being on time was my minister growing up. And he would stand there in front and saying that if you are not on time, you are being disrespectful. Not that I even understood it at that time, but I have to say since then, it stuck. So to begin tonight, let me just kind of make sure that we have the right perspective of this evening's program. So I'm going to kind of just paraphrase what you all did read in the Commonwealth program, that tonight is all about feeling confident when meeting anyone from anywhere in the world, that overall it is not so much about us physically going to another country as a visitor, although, you know, the tips will overlap, but more so it is all about tonight how we live in such a diverse world, in our neighborhoods, in our workplace, and as we go shopping anywhere. So it's more a little bit more in that perspective that what in this brief hour that we have, I wanted to share what I would consider your 8 default skills to international cultural awareness. And then, as some of you have already seen, the extra handout is another 16 points shared by an international organization that I have to say, and regrettably, is no longer in existence. So you'll see the Business Diplomatic Action Group. If you go on the website, it will not pull up. But I've always been able to use their handout. So based on that, I embrace questions, and as Norma said, I'm going to breeze through my 39 slides that I have for you tonight, and hopefully it's just like a minute, a mile a minute, or a slide a minute, and then I love getting stumped for the evening in terms of what you may want to ask. But let me start with three basic questions. Show of hands. How many of you believe people are ruder today than they were 10 or 20 years ago? Oh, man, practically everybody. Okay. Show of hands again. In the past 6 months, how many of you have witnessed a person using their cell phone rudely and inappropriately, and in this state, illegally? Okay, almost all of you again. Some of you aren't playing, though, over here. But okay. Last question, though. How many of you are willing to admit in the past 6 months maybe you, too, may have used your cell phone rudely, crudely, and maybe inappropriately, including myself? Far fewer. I totally understand that. Okay, what this survey comes from is an Associated Press Ipsos rudeness survey. Although it came from 2005, my points will still hold true today in 2013. So that number one question, 89% of 1,500 people polled from across the U.S. did believe that people are ruder today than it was 20 or 30 years ago. But I have to admit, when I was reading this article, I started thinking about the fact that, wow, in my lifetime, in all of our lifetimes, we probably could have chosen any 20 or 30-year period, and the answer would be the same. So here it is, 2013. We could have asked it in 1992 or 1972, 1952. That in these past 50 years, yes, things have gone downhill. We did go through the hippy-dippy era, you know, where everything was free to be. But yet, I'm pleased to say in this, you know, 2013, finally, I think the pendulum is swinging back. People are tired of rude behavior, road rage. In fact, I saw that 2 weeks ago on the bus. I moved to Marin and starting to take buses now. And real quick sidebar here. It just was so profound to me. I can't believe that it happened in Marin, because you think people in Marin might be a little more polite. Oh, yeah, I know you're shaking your heads. Okay, so I'm driving along in the bus. And all of a sudden, a white truck comes alongside. We're in the fast lane, in the carpool lane. Truck comes here and cuts off another car to get in front of the bus. And then he puts on his brakes, which means the bus has to slow down. Bus driver's thinking, oh, he just wanted to get into the carpool lane. Then we notice he had no passenger, and it was carpool this in the morning. So the bus said, oh, well, let me get out of the way of this guy. So he goes over to the second lane, and then the truck goes in the second lane. And now he's really realizing, I think this guy somehow has road rage, must be thinking I did something inappropriately. So, no, I don't want to be behind him. Comes back to the carpool lane. He goes back to the carpool lane twice over. So he finally backs off the and then did you know that buses, at least Marin buses, have cameras? So he was able to press a button and put on a video of his bus and all that was happening. So he got a couple of us being willing to sign a little piece of paper saying that we agree to it. Then the truck got off on the Marin City exit, and all of us were looking across and seeing him finally exiting. And honest to God, and please forgive me, he flipped the bird at all of us. So, you know, it still is happening anyway. So, no, we got to be careful of that. Okay, that second question, have you witnessed somebody using a cell phone rudely? Yes, 50% of all the 1,500. So that means like 750 people said, yeah, we've witnessed it. Now, grant you, is 50% because in 2005 there were fewer cell phones. Today, your vote, I think, was much more indicative, near 100. But the last question is the point of this beginning. Only 8% of the people polled were willing to admit that they had used their cell phones rudely. So you got to think. Were the same 50 people looking at the same 8%? You know, it's an improbability. So the point today is that as I go through some of these slides, that it is naturally very easy for us to always blame somebody else, always think, you know, it's the other guy's fault, not my fault that this is happening, or be oblivious to so many things. That because we live in such an international diverse world now, we are at a point we need to be adapting and adopting new and different skills we may never have thought of or needed as we were all growing up. Take a look at this. Oh, now it worked about an hour ago. No problem. Okay, where is this? Okay. It's going to happen in a minute. Yep, there it goes. So, who can tell me, what do you think these little dots represent? I know you can read there up front. No. Oh, okay. Oh, you've seen it before. Terrific. So I'm going to give one other person a chance. Anybody else? Yes? Yes, airplanes. You can actually see on the lower right screen here, it's from the NASA, and actually you can pull this off right off of YouTube. It is a map of the world where all the yellow dots represent airplanes, and you know every airplane that flies around the world typically holds at least 100, 500 more people. So as you can see, 24/7, we are living in a global economy. There is no turning back on this. And we're blessed in the Bay Area that we don't have to practically fly anywhere. We got all the cultures right here. And we can have fun, you know, learning about different things. So actually, as you know, I am Chinese American. Born and raised in San Francisco, and I think most of you know what the major holiday that's coming up on February 10th this year. So I'm going to pass around a basket, and you are welcome to have one of these. And at the end, I will explain what you got in the little red envelope. So, pass it around. All righty. So the whole thing is, even as Confucius said, all people are the same. It's only their habits that are different. So, any country that you're going to live in, they are, you know, their cultures, their habits, their skills are the same. It's just that maybe you will be visiting it that will become strange, or they come here and it's strange to them. We all pretty much have one head, two eyes, two arms, and all of that. That overall, what now I love about the world is that we have a chance to really get to know the world right from our own backyard. So what's going to make the difference is, and I'll read this just because for the recording, is the art of changing yourself requires substituting new habits for old. You mold your character and your future by your thoughts and acts. You cannot climb uphill by thinking downhill thoughts such as, who cares, none of my friends do this, I don't need to worry about it. You must change your mind to change your world, and you got to make yourself do what needs to be done, because man alone or woman alone of all the creatures of the earth, you are architect of your destiny, by Wilfred Peterson. So we hold it within each of us to care enough to do the right things. Honestly, as we continue, I'm going to say probably most of this information you know in your head. But let me just ask you this real quickly. If we're not today, we're talking about table manners, one at a time, could you share what would be the top two table manners you know you should never do while dining at a Western table? Anybody? Yes? Yes, no elbows on the table. What else? What's the second one you've gotten? Yes. Back. Okay, and you back there, Roberta? Oh, yeah. Don't blow your nose into your napkin, but even don't talk with your mouth full are the two. Top three, great. Three of you should get together and go on to Family Feud. You do very well. Okay. But the whole idea is, okay, how many of you did know these things before you walked in the room today? Okay, I would like to think most of you are going to raise your hands on that one again. But yes, so the whole idea, it's Two things do determine success. Number one, it's what you know. And number two, how well you communicate what you know. And the second is more important than the first. So what if you know no elbows, no talking with your mouth full, if you don't do them? Okay? So as I continue and share certain tips to you, sure, if I say no elbows, first thing in the brain, you're going to say, oh, I know that. You know, pat yourself on the back, whatever. Be cynical and say, yeah, everybody knows that. But then I want you in the silence of your brain to ask yourself this little question. Oh, how well and how on a regular and consistent basis am I really displaying the skill that Cindy's talking about? That really is the key. And that is what, if anything, is important for each of us to always take away from any seminar or workshop presentation like today. So keep that in mind. So it really isn't all about what you know or how well. It's all about your attitude. So success or failure is caused more by your mental attitude than your mental capacity, by Sir Walter Scott. It is a true. That it's going to be your attitude that you're going to care enough to think twice before you act, to think more about the other person than yourself, and to not be so hasty in your snap judgments of others. That really is very simple in terms of ground-level thoughts of going internationally. Okay, so we've got a handout there, and I'm going to go quickly through these 8 tips. I think the best thing, whether you are traveling internationally or even going to any kind of a meeting here in the U.S., whether it's a client meeting, an interview for a job or whatever, is to think a little bit of ahead before you go to that meeting. And most of my work is in the business arena. I do a whole segment on pre-meeting strategies, what to think about, do before, during, and even after the meeting. And this is just, you know, a couple of the items that obviously, you should go through each of them. Today's world, we live in such a fast-paced world, and you may make an appointment by telephone. And it goes in one ear and out the other with the other person, regardless of culture. Confirm that appointment a day ahead of time, not the morning of. Because when you do it a day ahead of time, and I recommend doing it both by email and perhaps voicemail. In fact, voicemail first or telephone. So I pick up the phone and it rings. It kicks into voicemail. I then have a purpose to send that email, and it doesn't sound as though it's going to be redundant. If the person picks up the phone, great. You say, oh, I was just calling to confirm our meeting tomorrow at 9 o'clock. If anything's changed, you know, we can reschedule. If not, you send the email. 2, clothes, wearing the proper attire. I can't say enough today's environment with young people. If you have any influence over young people, going to weddings, funerals, special occasions, to be wearing something other than grunge. I went to a very lovely wedding that was actually of an Armenian couple last year. And we saw the parents appropriately attired, and they brought maybe 10 or 11-year-old young man who was in blue jeans and sneakers. And I just felt that these are the responsibilities of parents to buy them at least one pair of slacks, you know, and I know they keep growing, but nevertheless. Okay. Never leave home without it. Who knows where that little phrase comes from? It's an advertising jingle from years ago on television. American Express, terrific. However, my take on it today, never leave home without the telephone number of the person you're meeting. We all have cell phones to the point I have zero tolerance, zero excuse for somebody being late and not having called. If you're meeting them at the restaurant, take the restaurant number. If they have their own cell phone number, take it. But overall, things do happen. You get stuck in traffic. That's certainly understandable. But to, you know, keep someone waiting beyond the appointed time, I think, becomes the rude factor. Consider traffic patterns, of course, how long it takes. Do your MapQuest, your Google, to see whatever time it says to get there, and then add at least 15 to 30 minutes, depending on where you're going. You know, my idea is, so what if you get there early. What's the big deal? You can go to the ladies' men's room and freshen yourself up, relax, instead of rushing at the last minute. In this audience, I love it. I haven't used this for quite a while because I used to be a believer in Lombardi time. So who knows what Lombardi time means? I bet this audience, somebody's got to know. We're right in the middle of the season of Lombardi time. You got it, Vince Lombardi. He believed that if practice was at 9 a.m., he expected you on the field in full gear, ready to start practice at 10 to 9. And if you were there at 5 to 9, that didn't cut it. That means you were late and you were fined about $250. So for me, yeah, always get there 10 minutes early. Some of you were here like half an hour early tonight, which was terrific, but always think in those terms. Learn who else is going to be in attendance. Never attend a meeting cold, not knowing who else is going to be there. I don't care if you're in our office meeting, obviously business meetings. For me, I'm always doing a lot of informational interviews or sales calls, you might say. I wouldn't want to be blindsided not knowing that the CFO was sitting there along with the sales manager that I originally made the appointment with. What's the purpose? Obviously, knowing what the purpose of the meeting is, what's expected of you, what the outcomes are. These are just simple things that actually, if you're going international, all the more important for you to go through each of these items before you step into that meeting room. And with email, traveling, all of these things are crucial. So, just one or two other items. What else would you put on the list that's the most important for a business meeting, meeting people internationally? Anybody? Business cards. We're going to talk about that, right? Next. Yes? What else? Mm-hmm. Perfect. The gentleman says that you get the hotel to write their address and wherever. Every major hotel nowadays have their own, cards. And they are in English typically and in the language of the country. So the first, along with your key, when you first check in, you should get one of those cards. But he's talking about even ahead of time, because what happens if you get to the airport? How are you going to get to the hotel? It is for the cab driver to take you to the office, everything. I have, since 2009, I've been traveling to Beijing, China primarily. Although I'm Chinese-American, I was born and raised speaking Cantonese. So I am almost useless in Mandarin. So again, I never leave home without it, is, as you said, everything written in English and in Chinese. And here's the other international insider tip, two things. Number one, get a cell phone from the country. You know, it's costly to bring your cell phone from the U.S., but get an in-country cell phone if you can possibly have it, and keyed into that cell phone is someone you trust and can know will always be on hand to help you if you get stuck, even with cab drivers. In China, they are notorious for not knowing where they need to take you because it's just such a big area that overall I have been in two major situations. He's driving around and can't find where it is and doesn't know. So either I've had the phone number of where I'm going so they can give him the address or directions, or I have my friend whom I call. So I think this is a wonderful tip for any time you're in any country. If you're a visitor and may not have a cell phone, get the number back from your hotel and have that cab driver call the hotel to be able to communicate. All righty. I'm a stickler on proper attire, and when it comes to... Yeah, don't you love that one? Okay, this one's a lot nicer, right? Okay. But when packing to go internationally, or even here, knowing what the appropriate attire is crucial. So please tell me, who knows, what should you wear when you are invited to a black tie event? Doesn't say anything else but black tie. Yes. For men, let's talk men first. Tuxedo. Okay. Yeah, formal is fine as the answer, but what does that really mean? Okay, so tuxedo, what else can a man wear? Okay, I hear dark suit. What else? Dark suit and white tie. Okay. I was looking for the question, the comment of you could be wearing the penguin suit or the James Bond jacket are the only two choices. Okay. That actually, when you get into black tie optional, that's when that dark suit, white shirt and tie kicks in. So honestly, that's a misnomer. That when people do, and it's a common one, that when you see black tie, you think you can wear that dark suit, white tie, and so forth, white shirt and tie. Not so. So, black tie, optional, you now know for men, you can wear that suit. Women, what are we supposed to wear for the black tie? What kind? Yep. An evening gown, which means long floor length. Yes, pants suits are fine. I have a tuxedo type, you know, formal thing. What if it says black tie optional? Then what can we wear as women? Yeah, then cocktail length is fine. But however, I personally feel black tie optional is kind of purgatory. You know, it's in between whatever that all of the penguins and James Bonds are prancing around, and then the people who are wearing suits are feeling not as, you know, whatever. That I'm a believer it should either be black tie or evening formal. And there's no question. Then none of the people would wear the tuxedos, and none of them would have to. Okay, so keep that. That's my little tip on how to do an event if you ever do it. Okay. Other than that, I think we understand. You heard my comment about weddings and all of that. The other thing is always to try and communicate in the style of the other person, especially when dealing with counterparts from other countries. So we learn the basic customs, you know, the difference in time, and always repeating it. In fact, I'm in the middle of negotiations right now with some folks in Zimbabwe. We had a Skype call last week, and then she says, oh, let's have another call next Monday at 1 p.m. CAT, Central African Time. Well, 1 p.m. their time, if you at all know the difference, it's 3 a.m. in San Francisco. So I had to write her back, and I said, thank you. If that is the only time you and your counterparts can do it, I'll do it. However, could we just make it 3 hours later and grant you 1 p.m. becomes 1, 2, 3, between 4 and 5 p.m. later in the day for you, but it'll be more comfortable if I get up at 5, you know? So always make sure you use both the time frames of your calls, using the different, whether it's military time or our 12-hour style. Writing dates are really tough. And for me, I have adopted the last style. You will never see me pretty much, you will never see me pretty much, oh, it doesn't do it on the television screen. Using any other style than the last one you see. So if it's the 20th of May, I'll put 20, but I'll spell out May and put the year. That is the only style I use for any of my correspondence in writing dates. So that will help greatly. Of course, Fahrenheit towards centigrade and anything, gallons, liters, miles, kilometers, inches to centimeters. So anytime you have any other kinds of dealings with folks in countries that use the other styles, learn them. It's fun. In fact, if you're a real techie, I understand that in Microsoft Word, there's a macro you can build that once you type in, say, the Fahrenheit and press a certain button, it will automatically switch to centigrade for you, or vice versa. So there are ways to make it a lot easier for any of your work. But the most thing I think that's important to understand when dealing internationally, and again here, is to think about me versus them. So show of hands, seeing the list of countries here, Switzerland, German, USA, Canada, Scandinavian countries, how many of you have roots there that either you were born in these countries or lived there for any period of time? Okay, great. Well, by and large, I'm going to suspect that when you are working within yourself, that you deal much more in precise, specific details. You are very methodical. You keep with precise schedules. If it's a 9 a.m. meeting, yes, you expect people to be there at 9 a.m. You have direct assertions. You'll be very explicit in your meeting. You'll be willing to say yes or no directly to someone's face. You have personal identity with them, you know, as you have with direct eye contact and understanding the hierarchy of things. And you deal in what is known as monochronic time, which means if I have a task and I got to get from point A to point B, I'll most likely break them up into sections. So I know that to get from point A to B, it'll take me 5 different steps. So I'll just, you know, go through each one of them, and I know I'll get to B very comfortably. It means that I'm very segmented, linear. Time is a commodity, so I want to even put down time frames. So if I have a project that's due Friday and it's going to take me 5 steps, then I'm thinking to myself that I probably have to do a step a day to get there, or I'm going to have to double up or who knows what in those things, and keeping my appointments straight and all of that. How many of you that raised your hands earlier can relate to this? This is how pretty much I work. You work. Believe it or not, I do, partly because I was born in the United States. However, raise of hands again. How many of you may have been born or raised in these countries of Eastern Asia, Japan, China, Korea, Southern and Eastern Mediterranean, Spain, Greece, Turkey, the Arab world, or even the Latin world? Any of you with these? Okay, a few of you. Well, perhaps as you are dealing in business, you may be more hesitant to be more direct with people. You will be a person that's more indirect. You will not be shy to be so emphatic in saying yes and no that you'll probably skirt it a little bit, go around it, never be impolite by even saying no to someone. A person that in the workplace may take on too many tasks because you're a person that never says no. You're more implicit. You have much respect for authority. So again, that makes you feel a little bit more hesitant to be direct. But the monochronic time also means that you could be a multitasker, which is kind of a neat thing, that when you want to get to point A to point B, it doesn't matter if certain things interrupt you. I was sitting in an office of an East Indian man in a hotel in Toronto, Canada once. It was a new hotel. They were going to have me come in for some training. So he didn't even have an office. It was in their big banquet room, ballroom, and they sectioned it off. So catering was down there and sales was over here. And he, as the general manager, had one little corner of his office. Well, throughout a meeting that typically doesn't last more than an hour, it lasted 2.5 hours because he kept getting up and leaving and coming here and taking phone calls. And I could have sat there and been totally, you know, bummed out, thinking he wasn't respecting me or my time or any of that nature, whereas in reality, he was much more accustomed to this style. So sometimes you just got to, you know, stand back, chill out, and recognize that these things have nothing to do with what you may be thinking in your mind. So doing several things at once. So in this very simple 5-minute demonstration, that's the first thing you've got to think about when you're meeting people. It's something that I do all the time. Am I meeting someone that was, you know, originally from a particular country? I go through a whole list. When I do our international cultural awareness, I have a whole sheet that in the beginning I have everybody fill out I am. Okay, man, woman, I am, how old, I'm married or not married, children or no children, what kind of education, religion, all of these things. And the other side is intended for you to know as much as you can about the person you're meeting. And that way will help you not to put your foot in your mouth. So if I was brought up Protestant or Buddhist and I'm meeting up with someone from an Arab country, a Muslim or Jewish and all of that, I may not say something inappropriate. So So naturally, without going through any kind of thought process, people have misperceptions and misconceptions that overall what is known as these high-context cultures of the U.S. and Germany and all of that, people are thinking that people from the low-context cultures are saying, boy, they're non-disclosing. I got it backwards. It seems like the high-context cultures of the Japan, the China, South America are non-disclosing, sneaky. They never say what they mean. They never say no in front of or yes in front of their face. And on the flip side, people from China or Japan are looking at Americans and saying, boy, are they talkative. We had a meeting. We talked over all of these terms and conditions, and then they hand me a contract, and, you know, to sign that has everything. It was 10 pages long. And then we have a meeting after we signed the contract to go over everything that was in it. You know, so they're excessively talkative, belaboring the obvious, and quite redundant. So just in the simplest terms, we get that clash. So coming full circle back to each of us, again, we just need to be aware and sensitive of who we're talking to and how it shall be done. So I often ask, you know, with a company, say in China, how do you typically deal with contracts? And I found they really don't do it that much. In China today, most people don't have their own emails. With the advent of smartphones, of course, more and more they're getting their own. But overall, even American companies in China, the only computer access that staff members have is in the office, in the workplace. Sure, so texting is really hot there. In fact, I've never texted before, and I still rarely text today. But while I was there, that was the main mode of communication with any staff member, arranging meetings, doing anything. It's not email, it's texting. So that's an interesting, that contracts are backup, they're necessary, they're important, but again, everything is subject to a potential change and, you know, common understanding. So, back to being on time, this is where I usually talk about Lombardi time, is being there ahead of time. Now, the next item was on hand gestures. There's a book back there all about international hand gestures, and I was talking to Norma a moment ago. A couple of years ago, I had the pleasure of addressing the same audience where we did hand gestures from head to toe. By any chance, was any of you here for that one? I'm going to have to dig that one up because it's a fun one. And I went from the top of your head saying that people often pat children on the head. Not great in Thailand because a child's head is in development, and for you to be touching them, especially with your energy and so forth, and again, for them being possibly Muslim, it is not good to pass energy. So we started from there all the way to the toes, you know, all kinds of hand gestures and all of that. That's quite fun. But it is important for us to keep our gestures at a minimum. As much as these two signs may become universal, that one where you take your index finger and your thumb and make a circle with it, what do you think it means? Okay. What else?
Zero.
Anything? Zero.
Money.
Very good. And something you don't want to say? Absolutely. Same thing. Okay, we have the index finger and the third finger in a V shape facing out versus facing in. And what do these two gestures mean? Well, okay, peace is when you face it out. Just like your palm of your hand or anything faced out means victory. Okay? However, when you do it facing backwards, as good old George Bush Sr. did once in Australia, he probably did do it purposely, but nevertheless, you know, it came back to the U.S. as not a great sign that you mean defeat. Okay? So these two, and the third, again, is an obscene gesture that you'd never want to do. There are tons of other ones that all I can say, keep your gestures at a minimum. Everybody else in the world are learning these two items, but you know, you get into countries such as Greece and Brazil, South America, both these gestures are quite inappropriate in any setting. So keep, you know, keep your hands to yourself. Other body language, people are taught. There's a whole new movement that I'm even working on based on a woman from Marin. I encourage you to invite her as a speaker if you haven't. I have nothing to gain by this, but she was phenomenal. Dr. Kara Alter is her name. She has a book out called The Credibility Code. Credibility code meaning you could have the best paper, you know, a written resume. You could have the best job experience. You could be dressed in the best attire, but when you're sitting in front of that person for that business meeting, you totally bomb out. Aside from even anything you say out of your mouth, and including it. So credibility code is all about even how you stand. If I were to be standing here talking to you or looking down or any way. So, in fact, I have a couple of, you can tell in this slide I'm showing that nobody agrees on what this man is trying to share with his team. You know, so gestures. Oh, a lot of offices are telling the receptionist, take a look at that applicant and see how he is while sitting there. And in this slide, we see one man that didn't get enough sleep the night before. The woman in the middle is kind of nervous. And, of course, the man on the far right is smoking, which in this state, you know, we don't do. Okay. Or throughout sitting in the meeting, you show you might have the jitters. So how does the woman on the left look to you? What descriptors do you have of her? Unsure. She looks unsure. Bored. What else? Guilty. Right. Okay. So obviously the woman on the right is much more confident. She has her head lifted, you know, comfortably. Always keep your chin parallel to the table or the floor is the best way. And overall, keeping your hands on top of the table. Now, this slide shows a woman with her elbows on the table that you know, she's not eating. So the however is, I prefer just keeping both wrists on top of the table. Maybe you have a pen that you're going to take some notes. But much better than keeping hands underneath. It gives you a much more demure look for men and women. Always keep your hands on top of your head. Oops, excuse me. I pressed the wrong button. And this for women. You know, it's the kiss of death in any business situation. If I were to tilt my head left or right, down or up, if I had my nose up in the air and looking down at you all the time, or chin down and looking up, gives off all kinds of signals. So these are all about your credibility code. What does it say about you without even your words? So internationally, again, when in a meeting, these things says volumes, because naturally you're already nervous sitting in front of someone from another culture. Okay, and what do you do about a person like this? Ooh. Okay, so you're networking. All I can say is focus on the person you're meeting. Even if you don't understand their words or you're having a difficult time understanding their accent or they may understand you, be focused and considerate. If you want to leave the person, the proper exit is to say, please excuse me. Don't just walk away, but at minimum, you must say at least that. And for the reverse, if you get someone like him, of course, why prolong the agony? You can excuse yourself and say, I'll need to freshen up my cup of tea or whatever. Okay, so why do I keep coming back to this gesture one? Who knows? You know, so nervous gestures such as fiddling with your earrings, or a gentleman with your tie, or we're almost done. Your hair, you know, things of this nature always will, you know, just cause distractions in your meeting. So again, these are the basic things that I tell people when you're meeting someone from another country, or even, as you can see, these are great default skills for yourself that you should not be doing. So, you never know what's going to happen to you. I have so many people that are rocking in their chairs. I've had that happen twice in my seminars. once with a younger person, because I do a lot of youth etiquette classes, and he, right at the left bank in Larkspur, they only have hardwood floors. Right there, I'm glad he didn't hurt himself, but the other one was in a business meeting, same thing. So you really got to be careful. All right, so I've gone through quickly the first eight, and the second handout, just to paraphrase real quickly, was the World Citizen Guide that I also gave you. So, all righty. So did we talk about handshaking? Gosh, have I? Okay, real quick, we got a few more minutes. Handshaking to me is really critical. Now, I know we are moving in the direction of wanting to be green, and a lot of people don't want to spread germs or whatever, but overall, globally, handshaking has become the form of mutual greeting. So everybody, will you put your hands out like this? Meaning your right and left hand are, and your thumbs are sticking up. I want you to put your right hand over your left hand, and then you're going to push all the way into your webs meet, which is right between your thumb and your index finger. And you know a good handshake means you take your right hand, wrap it down and around your left hand, and give it a little squeeze. Go up and down once or twice. Okay. The whole problem is you don't want that bone shake. You don't want that fingertip hold. And why don't you take your right hand, squeeze your left hand so hard till it hurts? So you know what a bone-crushing handshake is. So no more. Handshakes only come from your shoulder, elbow straight out. No down, no up, sticking your elbow out like in maybe Texas and saying, howdy, partner. You know, it just is a comfortable straight out that people from Asia, as much as they have learned to bow, and there were tons of books years ago when we first went to Japan on how to appropriately bow. In China, they bow as well. They've all adopted handshaking as they are going global. So my whole emphasis and style of my instruction is empowering you with a series of what is emerging and being called international business protocols. Protocols is correct word, although originally coming from the diplomatic international world, protocol in UN, protocol IT, meaning you go anywhere and how you behave is the same. Etiquette, of course, is a word that evolves through time and by culture. So where we used to have books that talked about men tipping their hats and women wearing their gloves or learning how to do your fans, we no longer have that. Now we have internet etiquette books and all of that. So it evolves, or how we can slurp our soup in Asia and have fun at it, but God forbid you should do that here in the U.S. or in front of the Queen Mother. So that's etiquette. But manners is the action word. It tells you how you should be behaving, acting out your etiquette or your protocol. And the newest word that I'm working on a whole new program, the hottest topic I'm getting by companies, is civility. Civility in the workplace. How do you get along with your boss or your coworkers who are diverse? So that is the number one, along with the email, cell phone etiquette. But coming back to this, shaking hands is it. Don't be shy. Women to women should be shaking hands. Men to men should be shaking their hands. Okay, so let me go through. Proper handshake, as you can see, shoulder to shoulder, eye to eye, never sideways. So if I'm sitting at a banquet table and someone comes up beside me to shake my hand, I'm not just going to just stand up and go, oh, hello, how are you, or turn around. I'm going to step away from my table and meet them eye to eye, shoulder to shoulder, and meeting them in their totality. So the next thing is understanding rank and status. We are still in an environment where we should be using Mr. or Ms. a lot more. Not Mrs. And I love those telephone solicitors that go, hello, is Cindy Seed home today? And I go, yes, this is she. Oh, hi, Cindy, how are you doing today? You know that's a telephone. Then they say, oh, hello, Mrs. Seed. Then I get to say, oh, I'm so sorry, you must have the wrong number. There's no one here by that name. I'm not lying. That's my mother's name. She's Mrs. Seed. I will never be Mrs. Seed. I could be Mrs. Hildebrand, because that's my husband's last name, but absent of that. So in business today, we're only using Mr. or Ms., honoring a woman for who she is and men. And that's it. Abroad, pretty much the same way. Okay. Business cards, very important nowadays to understand how the Japanese, in a way, have adopted how to give and receive business cards. So everybody's got their little red envelope. Real quick, take your red envelope out. There's a business card in it. Take that business card, put it in your right hand, and face it out towards the other person to whom you might be giving it. Great. And it does mean this way, not with your hands on top or this way. I mean, you're still facing it towards them, but by the Asian culture, by just putting one hand or both hands now that you can try putting both hands, it's showing the utmost respect of the culture and giving it to them as though you are giving it to them on a silver platter. This is the ritual of exchanging meishi, exchanging business cards. So from now on, always give it in your right hand or both hands. But I already know a couple of us are left-handed. Who else is left-handed in here other than, lots of you. We can never give our card in our left hand. So why? Kind of the same reasons we talked about earlier. Do you know more specifically why? Who cares? You know, I could give you a card in my left hand. I'm left-handed. Yes? Left hand is considered unclean, yes. So the whole thing is, I don't believe in you doing anything that is, in any culture, inappropriate. So as long as you learn the default skill of right hand only or both hands, you're cool. Same way, receiving it, you try to receive it with your right hand or both hands, and before you put it away, study it for a couple of minutes, learn to get to know the person. When you see a name written, it's easier for you to learn how to say it. Gee, would I be pronouncing your name correctly? Is it Sydney Saeed? Perfect time for them to say, no, it's Cindy Seed. And you're going to try and repeat it after that. Then, gentlemen, please don't pick out your back hip pocket, put that card in there, put it down, and sit on it. It's like sitting on a person's face. Or, conversely, you could have your cards in the back hip pocket, and when you bring it out and then you present it, ends up having that interesting curve, and it's warm. So that's my best joke, you know? So overall, keep your cards in a separate card-carrying case, keeping that card-carrying case in your jacket pocket, lapel, outside pocket is certainly fine. So that's your quick, and people are judging people by how you would present your card. So it doesn't matter if you're meeting somebody from the UK and you think, oh, well, you know, he's from the UK. I don't need to do this. It's a business protocol now. It will show your savvy. Okay. Almost done. Wait to be directed a chair. No matter what, never walk into somebody's office and plop yourself down in the first chair you see. Wait, and if they don't say anything, then you say, gosh, would you like me to sit here, or where shall I sit? I was so blessed I knew this once. Walked in there, the man came from behind his desk, met me, shook my hand. Then he went behind his desk again, standing there picking up some papers. And I'm just standing in front of the chair, fiddling my thumbs, and then all of a sudden I said, gosh, did you want me to sit here, or where shall I sit? He says, oh, you can see my desk is so messy. I thought we'd go to my small side conference room for our meeting. How would it have been if I plopped everything down, my briefcase, you know, drippy umbrella, who knows what, and that wouldn't have been too great. So this is about standing for introductions. Men have known this for years, but I'm here to say women, we've got to make this a habit, our default skill, in business especially. How does it look that she's just sitting there like a lump when this man walks into the room? So that's a default skill for me as well internationally. near the last on the sheet is when you're speaking and you want to share bad news or you want to ask a question, use what is known as a sandwich technique, meaning you'll share in the beginning, rephrasing perhaps what the other person has said. I certainly understand, if I understand you correctly, you were saying this, that, and the other. However, unfortunately, you know, regrettably, bridge words like that. And then, you know, tell them what, hit them with whatever information you need to say. But then end it with a resolution. So however, and after you say, but I'll use a real example. I do a lot of training in hotels. So people still do smoke in hotel lobbies here, just not realizing. So maybe someone walks up and said, oh, well, I certainly understand in many cultures and countries people can smoke. However, regrettably, unfortunately, it is a California law that prohibits people from smoking in the lobby. However, we do have a designated smoking area for anyone in our hotels over here. May I, you know, escort you over there? So that's how you overcome anything. You're sharing bad news even in the workplace. This is the most powerful tool I know of when dealing with someone internationally, with a hotel attendant, with a shopkeeper, you're trying to buy something. Just slow down, honor who they are, not say, oh, no, you didn't say it right, or hammer them with whatever it is. You know, be a little bit more sensitive. That's the most powerful, simple technique that I can think of for you. And, of course, the power of please and thank you. In any country, in any language, if you're visiting, have coworkers learn, you know, the good mornings, buenos dias, you know, bonjour to somebody, or the, you know, thank yous in the various languages is really powerful. In fact, even in English, as part of civility in the workplace, that's the number one thing I'm saying. Don't we not say that enough as we're with our coworkers and doing things together? Okay. And the last thing is a little bit about table manners, the concept of no matter what country you're in, to understand that you're not going to go to Asia and ask for a fork. You know, that if you're going to Asia, please try and use chopsticks. They will be so honored. At least you're trying. Halfway through the meal, if you're still starving and you still can't make it, then ask for a fork is certainly fine and understandable. But you gave it a shot. What bothers me is people who do go to Asia and immediately just ask for a fork. Eating with your hands. I went to India. I totally had to learn to eat with my right hand. So, you know, that was a whole new experience. And, of course, when eating with a knife and fork, my style is I advocate the international, continental, global form where you keep the fork in the left and the knife in the right. So you know, I love American zigzag. That's okay, you know, but it is cumbersome. Once you get the hang of it for the other one, it will take you a lot, you know, much more easy to eat. So we've gone through that real quickly. Last minute, like I said, let's take the guide. And this was just the last one, as you can see. But real quickly, just to paraphrase, I just want to go through a couple of them. Most of them are quite understandable, smiling all the time, showing your respect. Well, thinking, okay, we've talked a lot about thinking before you act. Okay. You don't want to know something? I don't have my glasses, so I can't read too much. okay. Number five, it's okay to talk with your hands if you know what you're saying. So we talked about that. A lot of these things, using slangs, acronyms that maybe seem very comfortable in your world, be very sensitive. Even here, I belong to an organization called the San Francisco Small Business Network. It's a coalition of 19 member organizations. And it's terrible what we do to some of our new delegates that come to our meetings. We're always using acronyms, and I'm having to take some of them aside and give them a little cheat sheet. So even when in our own dealings here, we have to be sensitive of who may be new. So always have a pen pal with them at all time. Yes? Save lectures for the kids. Yeah, don't start preaching to people from other countries about things. You can talk politics, but don't have an opinion, and don't ever let it get overheated in any way. Think a little like you are a native and local. You know, put yourself into their shoes and learn how to have fun, you know, living as they do. So as you're perusing, are there any questions? Because we're just about at the 7 o'clock hour. Speaking slower and more distinctly, adding your... One of my pet peeves in about people who speak in English, even sometimes I'm listening to the radio, is how... or even singers who don't put T's on the end of their words or D's on the end of the words, and then it makes it really difficult to understand. So enunciation, I think, when we're speaking with someone from another country or culture is very important. Not to speak the whole thing. A lot of times we've heard people speak louder. Loud isn't it. It's a little bit of slower. It's a little bit of enunciation. Okay? Like that. So,
mm-hmm. They will be recorded as well. I can bring around the microphone here if anyone has questions. Raise your hand. Here's one. Okay.
While she's getting that, I know I had a couple of questions earlier. One from you over here, and I forgot the question, but I remember you gave it to me. It's about gift giving when going to China or other countries. China is tough because the one thing you don't want to do is give a gift that's made in China. So which everything is, so it makes it a little tougher. But there is a Made in California site. There is also a new organization in San Francisco that says Made in San Francisco. So number one, the effort needs to be made of finding an item that is made other than in Asia. Japan's not great either. But other than that, here's my safest things that I've done is number one, I've given tons of See's candy. They love it over there, and they do sell it in very high-end stores towards $30 to $40 a pound. So when you're buying it here for $16, $18 a box, it's a terrific gift, or even some of the smaller ones. Some of your red envelopes have some of their little lollipops in them. That's a major item I give. Now, however, I will go as far as to say picture books of San Francisco are terrific, even if the back does say printed in China, because the content is what's enriching. So I've given away a lot of picture books of San Francisco. Anyone else have any other thoughts on favorite gifts they've ever used? Calendars sometimes are good. Things easier to handle. Do not wrap your gift when you're going abroad, because they may open it up in immigration. Bring the wrapping paper if you want. Just make it simple. No big heavy bows or anything like that. Okay, and your question was how to handle yourself internationally as a woman in business?
In Middle East.
That's a tough one. That, I would say today, is still, even if you are still the owner of the company, bring a male counterpart with you. Okay, because they're still not as custom. The higher level, the more global the Middle Eastern company is, they have understood better, you know, to deal with women in business. But absent of that, their default, you know, is always to look at a man. So I think out of courtesy to do that, anyone else, and to empower them with as much authority as you can, but also to have him feel comfortable. Oh, let me think about it. You know, and I'll get back to you on that tomorrow morning, and the two of you can talk. You know. Yes, back there.
The dictionary, there are changes as the years go by, and I'm sure the etiquette kind of can change, too. And new ideas of treating respectfully other people can arise. I'd like to nominate something and get your reaction to it. When I am on a bus, I want to sometimes address the driver. Or say goodbye or something. Thank you, Your Honor. And no bus driver said, I'm not my Your Honor. And it gets a smile, and I respect them. And also sometimes it's a matter of Mr. Driver or Madam Driver, like that. We can set the style in our own country of that kind of attitude toward the people who help.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have gotten compliments from two people, two separate times. The last one was actually from a guru of mine, Dr. P.M. Forney. He created the civility study down at over in Johns Hopkins University. He is from Italy, and he says the one thing that struck him the most in Washington, D.C., and especially here in the Bay Area, is how we all say good morning or thank you to our bus drivers, that even in his country, it is a nonentity. So I commend you for the idea of doing it. I think you are not wrong in saying Your Honor, but you're right. It's a little old-fashioned, people might say. So whatever is comfortable to you, I think is fine. Most times for me, I just say, good morning, thank you, sir or madam, you know. So they've taken, but Mr. Bus Driver, Ms. Bus Driver, I think, you know, is fine. We, of course, get into all these other things about the waiter, waitress. Look up in Webster's Dictionary. It is called waitron. Waitron is the generic word for a waiter or waitress. I don't ever use it. I think the default now is everyone is a waiter, whether you're a man or a woman. And last one? Yes.
Oh, I have a question. France, the kiss on the cheek. Mm. I have been involved with a French organization, some meetings where they're all kissing each other on the
right.
cheek, and I'm a little... not sure how to handle that.
That we have to all be sensitive. I did a seminar for a Silicon Valley company where one of the comments I was asked specifically to talk about was kissing, because there was a team of people that talked to a man from Chile quite often on the phone, by email and all that. And finally, he comes to the office to meet everybody. And as he went through each of the cubicles and met some of the women, he naturally gave them a kiss on each cheek. One young woman who was new to the workforce immediately marched up to HR and screamed the H word, you know, SH word. And so the director, of course, just knowing, she says, did he only single you out to do it? Or was he doing it to everybody else? You know, she says, well, I don't know. So she went back and found out, in fact, of course, he did it to everyone else. And she had her first lesson on international, you know, cultural awareness at certain countries, including France. But the question to you is, did they kiss you on just two cheeks or three times? That is the question to be.
Four. What's the difference between three and four?
Yeah.
That's about a second. That is
the question. From what I've heard is that it is on both cheeks, but when you are kissed the third or the fourth, it depends on, like if you're single, the third one is wishing you good luck in finding a spouse. So for men as well, they could be kissed on the third cheek, women as well in that regard. Depends on what region, and that's more South France that will do it than Northern. That's true too. Good point. And Brazil and so forth. All right.
Okay. No. And this lady has been waiting patiently too. So
okay.
Will have to be our last question.
I understand. No, thank you.
We're talking about interacting internationally. I'm finding that here, that interacting with people who are Chinese specifically, that they're very sensitive to gestures, to facial expressions, it's just remarkable. Easily offended. So tell me a little bit more about that.
Right. You're absolutely right. It's partly because we've not been brought up in a culture where that was displayed much. Growing up in my life, I was accused of not getting any jokes, not, you know, and being sensitive to someone that would share a joke that meant nothing to everybody else, but because I didn't even understand, I was offended in some way I didn't even understand. All I can say is part of the of our culture that, you know, we don't do in much facial expressions, jokes, things of that nature. So being foreign to us, we don't know actually whether we're supposed to be overjoyed at it or offended or whatever, and it just takes us aback, and naturally we always retreat and you know, become more self-conscious. So the only thing is, if you see that, if you are in a one-on-one situation, please, the other thing, when getting to know people, don't be afraid to ask. Did I say something that didn't sit well with you? You could say, I'm real. And naturally, you could learn another phrase that's more for business. Please forgive me. Not I'm sorry or I apologize. You may mean that, but there are times when you have nothing to really apologize for, nothing to really say you're sorry for, but you do want them to forgive you for perhaps saying or doing something that may have offended them. So that's a very powerful phrase, is please forgive me. Did I say something or do something that, you know, has offended you in any way? Because I could tell by your, you know, reaction, it didn't seem to, you know, sit well with you or whatever. Any other thoughts on that? But that's what I certainly, we all put our foot in our mouth in some way, shape, or form. Great. Let me finish. I just got two wrap-up slides. So we are what we repeatedly do. Excellence, then, is not just an act that you can turn on or off. A lot of people say, oh, I'll worry about this when I go abroad, or I worry about or think about doing this if I do meet up with someone from Asia or South America. I'm sorry. What we are talking about here today and everything I've shared with you should become a part of you, should become a habit that no matter it's against your next door neighbor, these are all cordialness things that you should be doing with each other. So from now on, you know, consider this, that once you change your attitude, you will change your behavior. Once you change your behavior, you will change your performance. And once you change your performance, wow, you will change your life. So I hope in this brief hour I've helped change your life a little bit. That's what, you know, is my whole goal in life, is just to just get you thinking about what you're doing. Because the homework really is all yours. And I welcome let me say, anytime you have my email, you have my card, call me, email me with any of your questions. I do have an international etiquette tip of the month where actually I go through in a lot more detail all of the 8 tips here. If you are all interested in having sheets on them, I'm happy to take your name. There's a sign-up sheet on the back, and be happy to send them to you as well. Because it all starts with how you think, right? So you got to watch your words because watch your thoughts because they become words. You got to watch your words because they become action, you know. And once you got to watch your action, it becomes habit. So once you get away with something once, you say, "Oh well, gee, that nobody noticed." And then you go down that slippery slope instead of raising yourself up. So watch your habits because they become part of your character, and your character becomes a part of your destiny. Coming full circle back to that first original poem that we were talking about, that really you, each of us has the responsibility of enhancing this world, just one person at a time. And the next thing, next year, I'm launching a new program called the Pledge Program. Pledge Program means people leading everyone to do good everywhere. So I hope that even tonight you will be going out and doing good among everybody from now on. So thank you very much.